She's able to win over some of those rebels very easily by making concessions. These are generally the lesser states, the disarmed states, which fear a big city like Chios, the island polis, or perhaps a resurgent Thassos, that regional power will come down hard on them, and therefore a weakened Athens is to be preferred as an ally or as a hegemon to the traditional opposing neighbor. On the island of Lesbos, this takes the form of Methemna, the second largest town, always backing Athens against Mytilene, the large city, which is an oligarchy with its own fleet. And it's easy to mistake these alignments as indicating a strong loyalty to Athens and democracy, and what it really is just local politics and expedience. Another perplexing point about these political alliances and allegiances in the Delian League is that when states rebel, especially in the islands, the Hellespontine regions, and Ionia, they're more than happy to call in Persian aid. And on a number of occasions, some of these states will actually bring in mercenaries paid by a Persian governor, will promise to pay something to the great king, again, preferring a distant overlord in Persia to the interfering Athenian officials. Athens, unlike Sparta as a hegemon, directly interferes in the daily lives of these states, in judicial matters, administrative matters, political, in the taxing. And you have to recall that very, very few ancient states had any sort of system of direct taxation. This tribute was seen as a mark of the loss of their freedom and autonomy. Furthermore, the tribute was not the sole amount of money Athens netted from this empire. There were various judicial fees, different types of licensing. Actually, whatever the sum of the tribute was at any one time, at, say, 432 BC, it was 600 talents. It is likely total revenues from the empire, which came in different forms and sources, was probably three or four times that, at least 2,000 talents, and may well have represented a third to a half of the income of Athens each year. And so to the Athenians, the empire was not only military power, it's not only the money for the ships and all, it is an enormous windfall of money that will sustain the development of radical democracy, that includes paid offices in Athens, the sustaining of the great building programs on the Acropolis, and also the securing of the trade routes that brought in all the foods and products that profoundly changed the diet and way of life of Athenians. And so Athenians saw this empire very much in terms of what I started this lecture out with, Thucydides. It is the source of enormous benefits. But at the same time, they had to shoulder the burdens of that empire. And that was an unpopularity that I believe ran very deep among the allied members of the empire, the various allies of the Delian League, and was also a resentment that required the Athenians to take increasing measures, not only to tax, but to defend their interest in these states. And much of the Peloponnesian War is going to revolve around the ability of the Peloponnesians to destroy that economic base. And when the war breaks out in 431 BC, that war isn't going to be a hoplite war. It's going to be a war of attrition in which the Peloponnesians and Athenians are both going to try to destroy the economic underpinnings of the alliance structures. And in the case of Athens, that is a daunting job indeed. You not only have to destroy the fleet, but the entire imperial structure supporting that fleet. And the Spartans eventually achieve this, but in so doing, they will win a war very different from the war they enter on in 431 BC. On the other hand, the Athenian benefits from this empire and the transformation of Athens into the great imperial power, that is an important issue that must follow this lecture, and that's what we'll be seeing in the next lecture.